This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
House Republicans backpedal. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, January 4th, glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
After intense criticism and pushback from constituents, House Republicans have dropped plans to gut the nonpartisan ethics board.
The Senate has taken the first procedural step to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. Another step is expected today.
Finalists for the NFL Hall of Fame include LaDainian Tomlinson, Jason Taylor, and Brian Dawkins. The newest class will be chosen February 4th.
And are you in the market for a new home? A list of the least affordable locations.
The median home price in New York County was 11.6 times the median income. That was looked like the highest rate that was different. And then San Francisco was 9.8 times. And we've all heard about the housing trends in these places, so it's not too surprising that they are some of the least affordable places in the country.
Market Watch reporter Carrie Paul with Where Homes Are the Most Expensive. She's here in about 20 minutes. Well, House Republicans have thought differently about gutting the independence of the nonpartisan ethics board. They faced serious backlash yesterday on the first day of the new Congress. Meeting behind closed doors, by afternoon, they dropped the proposal to place the independent Office of Congressional Ethics under the oversight of the House Ethics Committee, a move that essentially would have left lawmakers to police themselves by giving the committee the ability to cancel any investigation. Iowa Congressman Steve King didn't like the idea that whistleblowers could make accusations anonymously.
Jesus had the right to face his accusers. He asserted that before the high priest.
Sure.
And we're saying members of Congress shouldn't have that?
Did he just link members of Congress to Jesus? President-elect Donald Trump, in tweets yesterday morning, questioned the timing of the move over other congressional priorities. They could try to make some changes later this year. Lawmakers have raised concerns over the board, including objections that it makes complaints against them public. Passage of this was no guarantee anyway, since it was likely to get no support from Democrats. Even some Republicans objected. President-elect Trump says a planned intel briefing on alleged Russian hacking during the election has been pushed back until Friday, although it's not clear that a meeting was scheduled to begin with. He suggested on Twitter that the meeting was delayed because intelligence agencies don't have enough evidence to prove Russia's involvement. We get more now from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Trump's team has said it takes hacking and election interference seriously, but that it is still uncertain about Russia's role in the hacking. Mr. Trump announced Friday that he would take an intelligence briefing on Russian hacks after the White House issued sanctions against Russia and also expelled 35 Russian officials and shut down two sites believed to be used for Russian intelligence purposes. Last week, the government released a report detailing how they believe Russian hackers breached the Democratic National Committee and Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. President Obama, by the way, has ordered a full intelligence report on Russian hacking of political groups and individuals. Arizona Senator John McCain has scheduled a Senate hearing tomorrow on foreign cyber threats to the U.S. Alleged election meddling by Russia is sure to come up. Meanwhile, tensions within the Republican Party over how to handle Russia are becoming increasingly public as the Senate prepares for confirmation hearings, on Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson, the nominee for Secretary of State, who's had business dealings with Russian President Vladimir Putin. We're joined now by Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Paul Soni. Paul, what's the story?
Yeah, so I think what you saw during the campaign was that within the Republican Party, there were differing views, sort of Donald Trump on one side and his supporters who want a more conciliatory approach towards Russia, and then hardliners within the Republican Party like John McCain, who really see Russia as an existential threat to the U.S. and want to make sure that we're countering that. And so you already had this divide during the campaign, which came up periodically, especially as the hacking allegations started. But what we're seeing now, as we're going into potential Senate, essential a Senate probe on this alleged hacking, as well as confirmation hearings for Rex Tillerson, who has done business in Russia as Exxon CEO. This is going to, these tensions are coming out, and they're going to be much more at the forefront than probably they even were during the campaign.
Okay, so this will be interesting to watch over the coming weeks and months, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think John McCain, who's chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, is holding a hearing on Thursday about foreign cyber attacks on the U.S., which will obviously address Russia, and the director of national intelligence is scheduled to testify at that. And so that is kind of the first thing on the roster. And then the Tillerson hearings will obviously probably focus very heavily on his relationship with Russia and how he would approach Russia as Secretary of State, too.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Paul Soni. His piece is called Tensions Within GOP Rise Over How to Handle Russia. Take us a little more into sort of the Capitol Hill politics of this, because one person you quoted, I think it was Pat Buchanan, who had written recently that kind of this is an opportunity for Mr. Trump to, quote, start breaking the hold of senators such as Mr. McCain on the party's Russia policy.
Yeah, so Donald Trump and retired Lieutenant General Mike Flynn, who's going to be his national security advisor, believe that really what needs to happen is Russia and the U.S. need to partner in this global war against Islamist extremism, that we need Russia as our partner, and that actually the main threat that faces the U.S. is Islamic extremism, and that should be our number one priority, and we need to bury the hatchet with Russia and become basically friends and partners. John McCain and hawks on that side of the party, they actually put Russia more in the same camp as Islamist extremism. They see Russia and Islamist extremism as both being actors on the world stage that are trying to undermine democratic values, undermine the international order that the U.S. has established with its European allies since World War II, and really counter American power, whether through covert activities or hacking or partnering with American adversaries. So this is really boils down to a question of how much of a threat do you think Russia is to the United States? And there's disagreement on that threat assessment within the Republican Party. And as Pat Buchanan pointed out in that article, Pat Buchanan, who is a supporter of Russia and supporter of a rapprochement with Russia, he said, you know, if you look historically, a president will fail if his party isn't in lockstep on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. So Trump coming out of the gate into the presidency actually kind of needs to bang his party into line on a position. I think that's going to be a lot harder than people might suspect. But maybe Tillerson is the person who can walk that fine line. I don't know.
You think that you spent, 9 years in Moscow? You think Mr. Putin is watching this closely, or is he kind of smiling over the attention he's getting?
I think he is certainly happy with the position that he's in. Rex Tillerson is a very known quantity in Moscow, somebody that his Rosneft chief, Igor Sechin, and longtime confidant has dealt with extensively.
It's Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Paul Soni. It's 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio. Glad you're with us. Good Wednesday to you. The Republican-controlled Senate has taken its first step toward getting rid of Obamacare. A measure was introduced yesterday that sets a timeline for developing plans to repeal it. This has been long promised by Republicans who say the law is collapsing as some premiums surge and many insurance companies on the exchanges stop writing policies. Here's California Congressman Kevin McCarthy.
We've already reached out on both sides of the aisle across the country to create a health care system that is much different.
Meanwhile, today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is set to open debate on a measure known as a budget resolution. Approval means a process would be in place to repeal much of the health law with a simple majority vote. Reaction from White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
That's not a responsible way to govern, and it certainly is not an indication that you're looking out for working people in this country.
A repeal effort could mean the loss of coverage for millions of Americans. It could also spark a backlash in the 2018 elections. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to the new GOP era in Washington, got off to a messy start as House Republicans, under pressure from President-elect Trump, abruptly dropped plans to gut an independent congressional ethics board. The dizzying about-face came as lawmakers convened for the first day of the 115th Congress, a day after their secretive move to neuter the Independent Office of Congressional Ethics. Virginia Republican Dave Brandt says he and other members of Congress were bombarded with calls from constituents.
Drain the swamp thing is for real, right? The American people want to see ethics is for real. We're going to be fair. We're held to the same standards as the American people. That's ethics.
The episode is a powerful illustration of the sway Trump may hold over his own party. Paul Ryan has been reelected to serve as Speaker of the House.
So I want to say to the American people, we hear you. We will do right by you, and we will deliver.
Democrats nominated Nancy Pelosi of California for Speaker. The House also adopted, largely along party lines, its rules package for Congress, with Democrats protesting a provision that includes fines for members who use electronic devices to take pictures or video from the House floor. The provision comes 6 months after Democrats live-streamed a sit-in on the House floor to call attention to their demand for votes on gun control bills. The head of the National NAACP and five others have been arrested after staging a sit-in at the Mobile, Alabama office of Senator Jeff Sessions, President-elect Trump's nominee for U.S. Attorney General. The civil rights group says it opposes Sessions' record and views on civil rights, immigration, criminal justice reform, and voting rights enforcement. The all-day protest ended in handcuffs, but without confrontation. And singer George Michael's music is racing back up the charts. His album and song sales have surged nearly 3,000% since he was found dead in his home on Christmas Day. Three of Michael's solo albums and his Wham! Breakthrough, Make It Big, are back on the Billboard album chart. Two of his 80s hits are in the Hot 100, Careless Whisper and Faith. The 53-year-old who struggled with drug addiction died of heart failure.
You know, I was in Germany with my soccer team in high school when Wake Me Up came out. And,
yes,
like, I think that was 1983.
Mm-hmm.
But they released it in Europe first. So when I got back before the start of school, I was talking with my friends. I heard this catchy song from Wham! And
You're ahead of the curve.
I was such a trendy European hipster at the time. It hadn't been released in the U.S., so nobody had any idea what I was talking about.
Oh, you're cool.
I know. I'm just a music trendsetter. What can I say?
Mm-hmm.
23 minutes now after the hour. Thanks for being with us. For house buyers, the search for a home is getting more complicated. Here's a look at some of the least affordable areas of the country from this morning's Jennifer Koshenka.
If you want to purchase an affordable home, there are a few neighborhoods to avoid. Some are surprising. Many of them are not. Here to break it down is Carrie Paul of MarketWatch. Carrie, let's first talk about the unsurprises, California and New York. What are we finding there?
Yeah, we're finding that the median home price in New York County was 11.6 times the median income. That was looked like the highest rate that was different. And then San Francisco was 9.8 times, and we've all heard about the housing trends in these places, so it's not too surprising that they are some of the least affordable places in the country.
Specifically in California, where are some of the most expensive cities or neighborhoods?
So the data that was plotted on this chart showed it by county, so you can see that Marin County, San Mateo County, Santa Clara, those are all in California and some of the top expensive places to live.
And what about New York? Brooklyn has suddenly gotten the most expensive, right?
Right. There are some interesting trends in New York housing specifically. It used to be that people were moving to Brooklyn because Manhattan was too expensive. And in the past year or two, as Brooklyn has gotten more people there, become more vibrant, been built up more, now it's actually more expensive than Manhattan.
What are some of the newcomer cities to the list?
Some of the newcomers were places like Austin, Seattle, and Denver. These places may have been a little more affordable in the past, but due to an influx of people moving there, maybe more jobs there, and just trends of people moving there, it's become a little more expensive.
So in general, is it supply and demand that's making many of these places so expensive?
Yes. So if it's a place that there's limited space to build housing, that's definitely a sign that it could shoot up in being unaffordable. For example, places that have mountains, places on the coast, just if there's limited space, of course, there's going to be less supply for people moving there.
And is there a correlation between tech jobs and some of the cities that are on this list now, like Austin and Seattle?
Yeah, that could definitely be. As there's an influx of people moving to these places, it becomes a little less affordable. That's why places in the Midwest, that's what the National Association of Realtors suggested. If you're looking for jobs, if you have any opportunity to move to the Midwest, that's going to be the easiest place for you to buy a house.
And it's also because there's space to build?
Right. There's more space there, more housing being built. It's just more supply, no matter how many people move there.
That's this morning's Jennifer Koshenka with Market Watch reporter Kerry Paul. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Pleasure with us on this Wednesday, January 4. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: Republicans backpedal on ethics changes. The Senate moves to take down Obamacare. Homicide charges dropped against Superfly Snuka. TransUnion and Equifax fined millions for misleading us about credit scores. Megyn Kelly leaving Fox for NBC. Light up for Trump. A group in D.C. will be handing out free joints on Inauguration Day. Beyonce, Radiohead, and Kendrick Lamar will headline Coachella. And the celebrities we don't want as a neighbor. That story in about 20 minutes. You may have seen the video of twins climbing on a dresser in their bedroom when it falls on one of them. They're just 2 years old. There were no serious injuries, and somehow one of the brothers pushes the big piece of furniture off the other one, who was partially trapped. The Utah family that escaped the tragedy released the video to create awareness. But as you may know, not all families are that lucky. IKEA recently settled a $50 million wrongful death lawsuit resulting from dressers crushing three young children. But who's at fault? Families or manufacturers? Here's Philadelphia attorney Joseph Marone. Counselor, how do you see it?
Listen, this is no different than any other product that goes out into the marketplace, okay? The consumer obviously needs to be protected. The manufacturer of any product in this country has an obligation to put safe products out in the marketplace. And if they're defective, then they will be held accountable, and in this case, strictly liable.
Are you saying that this dresser was not safe?
Well, here's what happens. Obviously, it's not. I mean, you know, dressers are made to stand, you know, on its own, to be able to have objects on top of it, to have clothing inside of it. And also, it's foreseeable that, you know, kids are going to climb on dressers. Things of that nature have to be at least the manufacturers are aware of. And they have to design these products safely for the consumer. And that's what the issue is here. Did they design the product, this being the piece of furniture, safely for the consumer?
All right. So the answer is no? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, listen, here's what happens. You know, when something like this happens, and they take the dresser, they have an engineer, they have someone look at it, and what happens is if there was a way to design this piece of furniture in a more safe fashion, which probably there was, and if they can show, obviously, that the executives and the people in this company knew about it, and it's usually that they don't make the correct designs. It's usually a cost issue, and it's probably not a lot, but when it comes to dollars and cents and bottom lines in these public companies and these big companies, they look to cut costs. Then ultimately, you know, listen, they'll pay the price. And if they can find out that this was designed effectively, then they're going to be held accountable.
Man. All right. So I assume as consumers, we could choose to say, I'd like to pay more for a dresser that has a really heavy piece of wood in the back so that it won't tip over towards the front. But until then, I'm going to buy the cheap thing, right, that could tip over. So Could a company slap a giant sticker on top of the dresser that says, don't put stuff here? Does that do it or not necessarily?
Well, listen, that in itself is part of the process. They have an obligation to warn the consumer by putting proper warning labels. That in itself would help at least protect the manufacturer and also protect the consumer so they would become aware of this and maybe could prevent this from happening. But cost isn't the consumer's burden. You got to remember that. Just because it's going to cost more, too bad, they'll have to, the object is they have to make the product safe at any cost. So if it costs more, unfortunately, the manufacturer has to spend more. Okay, they cannot put an unsafe product out into the public.
We're speaking with attorney Joseph Marone about who's at fault for this dresser tumbling on a two-year-old in this viral video, and his twin brother somehow manages to kind of push the thing off of his brother.
That itself was a miracle.
Yeah, exactly. Here's my question. I guess it's 2017. We've had dressers with drawers forever. How is this just becoming an issue now? Is it because we're capturing this stuff on video?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's probably a multitude of reasons. For whatever it is, it's coming to, you know, it's coming to rise in the public. And the question becomes, you know, you take a look at the product and was it made safely? And a lot of times you take a look at it and it's always, it's not always the issue of safety. It's always the most inexpensive way to design a product because obviously the company wants to maximize profits. But what happens is when there's incidents that go on and there's tragedies such as this, they go back, they take a look at it, and usually it's a lawyer in a law firm, okay, that hires a bunch of experts to come in, engineers that they pay for, to take a look at it and say, hey, this thing could have been designed in a more safe way so the consumer can be protected. And obviously they also can probably show that they did know about it, and again, it becomes a cost issue. But what's going to happen is you ultimately have these tragedies, and you know, this is what it takes. I mean, litigation sometimes is a positive element. It helps you kind of cleanse and straighten out the process so that safe products are then obviously put into the marketplace so that this doesn't happen in the future.
Well, I couldn't imagine, like when I was back in college, you know, and I picked up like a little dresser set for about $30 third hand or something. Imagine if like a 2-year-old had just kind of, I don't know, been visiting, right, and had done that. I wouldn't have had that thing anchored at all.
No, and most people won't. And I think where it's going to start is with the warnings, the warning labels, the instructions, and then, you know, also these brackets, which are now being included in the new furniture. But I think they'll go out of their way to campaign and make these brackets obviously affordable and you know, out there for a lot of these people.
It's Philadelphia attorney Joseph Marone. It's 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can also follow me directly on Twitter with the username @GordonDeal. Thanks for being with us. Good Wednesday to you. Beyond the headlines now, This Morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it's that time of the year when many of us take a cold, hard look at our lives and, more importantly, our vices to set a goal we believe will make us healthier or happier in the year ahead. There are 1 billion smokers worldwide, and one resolution in the top 10 each year is the intention to kick the habit for good. But this goal is apparently the most difficult of all resolutions to keep. Of more than 2,000 people surveyed in the UK about their resolutions at the end of 2016, 8% had chosen to quit smoking, but only 41% of those kept it going until January 31st, and just 13% remained smoke-free at the end of the year. In the organization's survey, dieting was second from last in terms of resolution success, with 65% of people lasting 1 month and just 16% making it to the end of the year.
Hmm.
Not a lot of surprises there.
Yeah, it's hard.
Now, I've never had to quit smoking, but I mean, we've all known people who have tried, and it seems like just the most difficult thing in the world for people to do, because it's a chemical addiction, right? So it's not just it's not just laying off the sweets or whatever. Like there's actual like chemicals involved that are forcing you to do it.
That's a sea change,
right?
Really
right.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Now the dieting thing. Now I do that every year myself. I don't make it to the end of the year ever. I basically do it for like now. Like I start now.
Yeah.
I do like January, February. Sometimes I make it to March. It's really just in preparation for barbecue season is what it is. You know, if I make it to Memorial Day, then that was great, and then I have fun for the rest of the year.
You know, the thing is, if you're Catholic too, you can try to tie this into the 40 days of Lent.
Right.
you try to, you know, if you're giving something up, try to carry it right through to there.
Yes.
Then you're kind of religiously obligated to do it. That, right. that might set right. you on the path for the rest of the year.
Whatever you need to you get know? It done, right?
Right.
And if you asked Santa this year for a life-size Millard Fillmore statue for Christmas, but you didn't find it under your tree, you're in luck. A wax figure of the 13th president, along with figures of all 44 presidents, will be auctioned off later this month in Pennsylvania. The Hall of Presidents and First Ladies Museum in Gettysburg closed in November after 60 years in business due to dwindling numbers of visitors. The collection features life-size figures of all the presidents and one-third scale figures of the first ladies in reproduction inaugural gowns, as well as other presidential memorabilia. The figures will be auctioned off on January 14th. See, I have a feeling that, you know, like, say, you know, Lincoln and John F. Kennedy and obviously Washington and, you know, certain presidents will fetch higher prices. But you know, if you want to go in there bargain hunting, maybe for a Millard Fillmore, or a, you know, a Chester A. Arthur, you know, you could probably, you know, throw down a couple of bucks and take one home.
It is a little unsettling, though, that the museum in Gettysburg has to close. There's some deeper problems, I think, we have when Americans have stopped visiting museums in Gettysburg.
Yes, perhaps we need a civics lesson.
I think you're right. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio. 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, his inauguration less than 3 weeks away, President-elect Trump is raising new doubts about the nation's intelligence community, tweeting fresh criticism at the same people who will help inform his most sensitive decisions once he takes office. Trump charged on Twitter yesterday that the timing of an upcoming intelligence briefing on suspected Russian interference in the election had been delayed. Intelligence officials say there was no delay in the briefing schedule. Senate Republicans have introduced legislation that's a precursor to repealing much of the Affordable Care Act. Successful passage of the measure would allow a detailed follow-up repeal bill to pass through Congress without fear of a filibuster by Senate Democrats. But White House spokesman Josh Earnest says a repeal isn't in the best interests of the people.
If Republicans repeal the Affordable Care Act, they will reverse that progress. Millions of Americans across the country are protected from being discriminated against because they have a pre-existing condition.
The passed measure directs top congressional committees to cast votes to assemble the repeal legislation by January 27th. And that means there's no time for trying to add legislation to replace the ACA. The sentencing phase begins today in Charleston for Dylan Roof, the 22-year-old convicted in the slayings of nine black worshipers at a historic church. The jury that convicted Roof will now decide whether he'll get the death penalty or life in prison. Roof is representing himself, but has said he plans to call no witnesses or introduce any evidence. A California prison official says cult leader Charles Manson is alive following reports he's been hospitalized. Manson was taken to a hospital in Bakersfield, about 60 miles south of the California prison where he's been incarcerated. Other details about the 82-year-old were not released. And just what everybody needs, a $200 hairbrush. Beauty giant L'Oreal has unveiled a smart hairbrush packed with sensors to help you improve your brushing technique. The Hair Coach, which contains a microphone to record the sound of breaking hair, will vibrate if you brush too hard. The brush is one of many new beauty gadgets that will be introduced this week at the annual Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas.
Gee, I wonder which gender that's targeted at.
Well, come some men with... buns?
No.
With guys? They need a brush.
You don't need a brush with a man bun, do you?
Well, before you get it up there, you
just
do.
Bunch that thing up in your hands and use a rubber band, don't you?
Do you know?
I don't think mine's quite that long for a man bun. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Glad you're with us. Which celebrity would you pick as your neighbor if you could choose? Which one would you not want living next door? Funny new survey from Zillow, the real estate research firm. Most desirable neighbors, the Obamas at 14%, followed by The Rock. Chip and Joanna Gaines were on there. Ellen DeGeneres, Adele, Taylor Swift wanted by 6% as a good neighbor. Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, 28% said none of the above. The worst neighbors, Justin Bieber, Rob Kardashian in Black China, Tom Cruise, Taylor Swift also made that list. Tom Brady, Jets fans checking in, Ryan Lochte, Billy Bush, A-Rod, 19% chose none of the above. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Hey, thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more from This Morning Show, check us out at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.